There we go. Have we? Can people hear me online there? Looks like it. That's good. And so what we'll do is I'm just going to share this guy here. Excellent. There we are. Very good. All right. Now, well, it's great to see everybody here this morning. Certainly, it's been a very hot day outside, and I think it's cooler in here, just a little bit. And this morning, there we go. Just finished off this here. Yeah, so this morning we're contributing to our online series, which each of the Christian Israelite churches contribute to, and we've got an online series going at the moment with exploring some biblical history and journeying with Abraham and the lessons that we can learn from looking at his life and his experiences and things like that. This morning's one is all about patience, and if there's something that sort of defines Abraham, it's faith and patience, I think. They're the two key things that he really had that made him, well, that made him great, that made him special. As per usual, we're going to have some singing first up. So we've got got our singers up and the band's in position, and I'll take my place. Oh, but before we do, a little bit further on this, a bit more about our online series here. Obviously, we're in December. This is our summer series. We're journeying with Abraham. In January, we'll be journeying with Jesus and looking at some of the teachings that he gave, and also what we can learn, a lot to learn there. And then in February, we'll be looking at the journeys of Paul. And as we know, we did a series on that probably 10 years ago. And it's amazing what those first apostles and the disciples did in those early years. But anyway, I left these guys standing here long enough. Let's have some singing first of all. Our first up is, O Come O Ye Faithful, so a carol. So I'll pass it over to you, Lily.
Yes, thank you, Ben. If everyone would like to stand up, our first song, as mentioned before, is O Come All Ye Faithful. Second song for today is another carol, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. one for now is, here we go, Trust in You.
Well, I don't know that we needed any more warming up this morning, but it's certainly nice to get together and sing some prayer songs of praise. And I couldn't resist putting that last one in there because I thought it tied in so nicely with what we were talking about today, with looking at understanding the promises of God, looking at what's happening around us, and going, how does this even fit? How can things still be under control? How can God still be in control when the world seems to fall apart and around us in our ears? And certainly I think that was kind of a little bit of what Abraham faced as well in his life too. We know that he had all these promises. God visited him on multiple occasions and, promised that he would be blessed, that his seed would actually become this great multitude. And yet, him and Sarah actually hadn't been able to have any children. And that was a real weight on their shoulders, that's for sure. As I mentioned, we're in the middle of a series here looking at the journeys of Abraham. And we're 21st of December, 4 days till Christmas. I don't think we haven't even had time to put our tree up this year. It's been so busy. Basically, there's a lot to be learned from these examples, from these stories in the Bible. We had our singing time this morning for the young kids, and they're heading off to Sunday school now. And it's so that they can learn those Bible stories, so that they can learn about these people that have come before, these examples that have been given to us, that we can actually draw experience from, we can draw hope from, we can draw all sorts of teaching from. And it's wonderful for them to be able to get that at such a young age as well. So learning your Bible stories, I think, is a great one to check off on your checklist. The other one, as everybody here would know, I think people should memorize their hymns, and I think people should memorize Psalms. If you can carry those three, then they'll pretty well carry you through most situations, really. So, of course, one of the promises that was given to Abraham was to do with his succession, I guess, his seed, as he called it. And in Genesis 15:5, we see that God actually, I'll read it. And he brought him forth abroad and said to Abraham, "Look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them." And he said unto him, "So shall thy seed be." And at this point, when Abraham was, a little bit less of 80, somewhere between 75 and 85, he didn't have any children. So it was a little bit difficult for Abraham to see, I think, how that could even be possible. Let's start this morning with the Lord's Prayer, which I'll repeat from Luke chapter 11, as Jesus taught his disciples to pray. This is a great one for us to also remember. Another thing, we're so blessed to have memories so we can remember these things. And so if you'd like to bow your heads, I'll repeat the Lord's Prayer from Luke chapter 11. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now, speaking about evil, I don't think we could really... Speaking about evil, I don't think we can really move on this morning without making a little bit of a comment about last weekend and the horrors that we saw unfold in Bondi and the innocent lives that were lost there. And I think it's something that has really shocked a lot of the Australian people, a lot of the Australian culture out there, which is, basically founded upon, people looking after each other and giving each other a fair go and, mateship and those sorts of things. These are the things that we pride ourselves in as Australians. And yet we saw the very opposite of all of that, and the sort of, the symptom of an underlying or festering sort of, disconnect between different communities and downright hatred that we have observed for years overseas. But we've never really recognise that this too can happen here. We don't realise that the fabric, the delicate fabric of our society is so easily undone when we allow certain things to creep in and undermine our core values. Australia historically has been a Christian nation. It was founded... You look at the way our parliament's set up. You look at all of the different institutions, such as the education system, the hospitals, everything. These were set up by the churches, by the early missions that took root in our very young country, basically established the wonderful, prosperous nation that we have today. Historically, we're a country of immigrants, you could say, as well. Sure, we had our indigenous population here, but from all, as one of the songs says, from all the lands on earth we come. And I am, you are, we are Australian, and it's a wonderful thing that we enjoy and take pride in being. But there's an interesting thing. When you have a nation that is founded on something like Christianity, on a certain religion, then you have to realize that it's no accident that we have what we have today. This is not because we're just better morally people or anything like that. We are all fallen creatures. We know that we all carry with us that tarnish of sin and evil from that first fall of Adam and Eve. And we know that, you know, we've all fallen short of the glory of God. And so not only us, but I think everybody in Australia historically has really recognized that we're all just doing as best as we can. And yet what we've seen is that we've forgotten that Christian culture, Christian morality, a society founded on Jesus' teachings is what's made us great. And we've somehow fallen for this lie that all religions are basically the same. We've heard that before. It's, you know, and yet the interesting thing is that you can only really say that if the dominant religion is Christianity, because most other religions won't tolerate other religions around them. So that's an interesting thought. But I think the other thing too is that not all religions are the same, unfortunately. And what we find is that in some cases, some religions are almost the opposite of Christianity, where violence and hatred and, you know, basically is the ultimate, where in a Christian life, in our Christian virtues, we see sacrifice and we see humility and we see putting others before us and treating others as we would have them treat us as being the highest points in our Christian teaching, in our religious teaching. And so, we actually have a book on this, which goes through and it does list out the different religions and how they are different to Christianity. Obviously, we've all got access to the internet. You can see on there that there's plenty of articles that have been done comparing how Christianity is so far superior to these other religions. Not because it gets in and it dominates and it just wipes out any other religion, but because it has the ability to change the hearts and the minds of the people who follow it to be something more godlike and something more wonderful than any other religion can make of its people. We need to remember that, and we need to return to these things. We can fix symptoms, we can tighten controls, we can look to the government to fix our problems, but it's the people's hearts that need to be changed. It's the people's hearts that need to be turned back to the fathers, that needs to be turned back to our Christian fundamentals. Anyway, all we can say is that we need to pray for our nation. We need to pray for the people in our nation, and I think that if we can only hope that this will be a little bit of a... if the only good thing that can come from it is that we will see people returning again to their fundamental Christian beliefs, then that would be a good thing. So, let's start this morning. As I said, let's get on with our series here. And believe it or not, I kind of feel like this story, this developing patience, this taking matters into our own hands, thinking, yes, God, we've got this, we understand everything that needs to be done here, we'll take it from here type of thing, is a little bit of what happened in Abraham's life as well. And we'll read about that this morning. We have a fair bit of reading. I'm sorry it's so hot. Hopefully you all stay awake. But I'm going to read three of the... well, it's arguable whether there's about six different times that Abraham was promised that he would have children. And the first one I'll read was actually from Genesis 12. Now, this is when Abraham was actually up in Syria, up in Ur, and this is the first call to Abraham that God made. Genesis chapter 12. Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. And we as Christians understand that to be a direct prophecy of Jesus Christ and his coming to save the world, which of course came through the line of Abraham. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. Well, that's nice, isn't it? I love the way that the Bible has this very interesting way of stating what would seem to be the obvious. But anyway, I love that. I think that's a really interesting way that God has put that. I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. It doesn't really talk about Abraham, sort of his seed at that point, or having children or anything like that. But how else would Abram have assumed that he was going to become a great nation, except by having lots and lots of children? So this is when he was 75, mind you, and I think Sarai was about 9 years younger or thereabouts. So she was pretty old as well. Not that 64 or 65 is very old, but but it's a little bit old for starting to have your family, right? So anyway. Okay, so we're going to jump forward a few chapters here and read an excerpt from Genesis 15. Now, this is sometime between when he was 75 and 85 years old. After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless? And the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus. So Abram's not, he knows the problem. He's not silly. He would have heard this promise. He was expecting something to happen. Much like we do. We read these promises in the Bible and we go, oh, great. So next week, this is going to happen. You know, we put our timeline on these things. God has his own time for these things. He goes on, and Abram said, Behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, This shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, Look now toward heaven and tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. That's actually quoted in Hebrews as well. Now, interestingly, God's left this a little bit obscure, right? It's just been, you know, this is the sort of thing that us humans do, right? We read something, we read a promise, and we go, okay, let's put our little bit of, let's read into this a bit more than perhaps is already there. What did he say in verse 4? But he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels. So in other words, somebody that's going to come from you, he didn't say Sarah, right? He only said him. And so, you know, the wheels start to turn. Okay, well, maybe I'm not the problem. Maybe she's the problem. You know, I don't know. Like, I don't know what was going on in Abram's mind at this stage. But the result was not very good, as we'll read a little bit later. Okay, go to read the third time that he promised him. And this is, Abram's a little older here. He's at the ripe old age of 99. Now, 99 is not as old as it used to be. Maybe, I don't know. It's we have a lot of people who live into their 90s these days, and, you know, they're still young and sprightly, really, when you look at them, you know. But I'm pretty sure that Abram still would have known that 99 is a little bit too old to be starting the family. And yet God comes to him and makes another covenant with him. And when Abram was 90 years old and nine, the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham. For a father of many nations have I made thee. And I will make thee exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee. He didn't have a seed at this stage, just, you know. Oh, actually, he did. Anyway, let's just, we'll go back to that. And thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. I'm just going to cut out a few verses there and jump down to 15 to keep the time down. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Well, this was a little bit too much, I think, for Abraham at this stage. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, that is 90 years old, bear? And Abraham said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. We'll get to that story in a minute. And God said, Sarah, thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year. And he left off talking with him, and God went up from Abraham. So you can see here, I don't know whether you noticed, but the progression here in the message that was given becomes a little bit more specific every time. First of all, it was, I'll establish a great nation by thee. Didn't say anything about children, anything like that. The next promise came, out of your children will become a great nation. That left a little bit of, it was a little bit vague for Abraham and Sarah, so they decided to take other action, which was probably a little bit of a problem, as we'll see. And then finally, God makes it very specific, very clear in Genesis 17 here, where he says, you will have a child by Sarah. So we're going to step back a chapter now in our last reading here. And it's where Sarah and Abraham, they probably had the conversation. You know, it's interesting reading through the Bible. You don't get all of the story of everything that happened. God gives us enough of the story for us to get the message. Interestingly, the Bible is one of those books that kind of just tells it how it is as well. All of the good things, all of the bad things. You know, it's basically, it's not saying that everything that is in the Bible is a good example of the way we should live, or is exactly the people that did these things, that they've done it all perfectly. It doesn't try to say that. It gives a real world example to us in these stories of what people do. And this is something that we all do. We take matters into our own hands. We go, you know what? Yeah, God, okay, I know you've got this, but you know what? I think I can help. You know, Abraham and Sarah, they really did this. They must have had this conversation, and Sarah's like, so hang on. What did he say? Did he say that he said you were going to have children? Okay, but did he mention me? Oh, no, he didn't mention me. Okay, that must mean that it's probably nothing. Maybe it's not by me. Here. We'll fix it, and you can marry my servant. Well, I don't know what relationships were like in those days, but I'm pretty sure that that's just asking for trouble, and it appears that there was trouble that came from this as well. So let's read what happens when Sarah and Abraham, or it's actually Abram and Sarai at this point, take matters into their own hands. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, behold now, The Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. I don't know how she thought that was going to work. But obviously, as soon as the maid fell pregnant, she's going to have the elevated position in the family of being the one that is carrying the heir for Abraham. Like, this is never going to be a good idea for, I don't know how Sarah thought it was. But we see Abram's response here, and instead of leading the family and actually saying, now come on, just calm down here, I think you're blowing this out of proportion a little bit. We've just got to trust God. He hearkened unto the voice of Sarai, which happened to be the same problem that was recorded in Genesis as well. It's on the right. Read it in a minute. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. So she blamed him. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. And the Lord judge between me and thee. I think it's really easy for us to look at this situation with hindsight, knowing that these guys have been in Canaan for 10 years. They're waiting for these promises to be fulfilled. And yet we know that, you know, in a matter of another 14 years, which sounds like a long time, but in 14 years' time, that was God's timing. We look back and we go, what were you doing? Why, how did you think this is a good idea? We can be really good and really, you know, 20/20 hindsight, I think they call it, don't they? And, you know, there's so many examples in the Bible where we look at these stories and we go, well, there's no way in the world we would have done that. We're so good at knowing exactly what we should be doing. Or are we? Anyway, I just highlighted down there in Genesis 3:17 that when God was actually telling Adam and Eve that they'd done the wrong thing, the charge that he put on Adam was, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. Now, wives are very, very persuasive, and they have lots of wonderful ideas, and, quite, you know, the husband may be the head of the house, but I think I've heard it quoted from a movie sometime, but the woman is the neck and can turn the head any which way it goes. That's what I've heard. Now, having said that, though, God has given us husbands and wives relationships so that we can work together as a team. It's about so we can build each other up, so that we can strengthen each other, so we can work together. And that sometimes means that we need to turn around and say, honey, I know you're upset. This is a really bad idea. We shouldn't be doing this. At this stage, we need to be trusting what God has said 10 years ago. You know, he's got his timing. He'll bring it to pass, and when he makes it beautiful, it'll be in his time. And that's a wonderful thing. I think I recorded the end of it. All right, so there's a bit of commentary here you could make probably about the whole master-slave, you know, master-servant type of thing as well. But we're not going to go into that today. What we can see here, that the reaction is as you would expect. Hagar becomes a little bit puffed up, as it says, in her, and of course Sarai, of course, is as jealous as all get out. You know, she is she's very upset about the situation as well. Emotions would be very, very high in the Abraham household. And Hagar actually runs away at this point. From verse 6. But Abram said unto Sarai. Now this is after, sorry, we'll go back to 5. And Sarah pins it on Abram and says, this is your fault. And what we see here is that Abram's like, okay, well, fine. She's your servant. You do whatever you think's right. So Sarah goes and exacts a sort of a form of revenge, it almost sounds like, vengeance here. Which is, again, not a Christian principle. Anyway, Behold, thy maid is in thine hand, do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way of Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou? And whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress and submit thyself unto her hands. Now, I guess the thing is what they're saying here is that you need to be in this household. You need to exist in that household. Sarah's going to be cranky and all spiteful and things like that. He's actually asking her to bear it for that period of time. And of course, we can see here that he follows that up with a promise in verse 10. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, and that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction, and he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me. Before I finish that, for she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? I kind of really love that response. It's almost like she's realized that despite all of the mixed up situation that she's ended up in, despite whatever she's done and the way that she's contributed to this situation as well, goodness knows what she could have done differently, who knows, she's recognized that God is still there. God sees her. And we are all individually seen by God. He knows each one of us better than we know ourselves. We think we know our spouse or our children or our relations and things like that. God knows us better. And that's a wonderful thing. And that's a promise, I think, as well, that we can hang on to when we face even the toughest circumstances. God knows me. Not that we deserve any of it, because that's her next statement. Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? What have I done? Have I even given this God that sees me, that is actually looking after me, the credit that he deserves? And that is the Christian response. That consideration of our own heart to know whether we are truly following the God that sees us. He's got a plan for each of us, and he will make it, as I said, from that Ecclesiastes 3:12, I think it is, he'll make all things beautiful in his time. All right, let's finish the chapter. Wherefore the well was called Beer-lahai-roi or something. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. So 86 years old. Let's have a hymn now, and I've just got one reading from the New Testament. I thought this one might tie in nicely as well. Hymn 121, God moves in a mysterious way. Thanks, Jenny and Paul. Hymn 121, God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm.
Might as well stand up.
Yeah.
I was just thinking as we were singing that, you know, how when you look at the events that happen in history, and some of them are extremely shocking and very tragic, and yet you kind of consider, well, there is a greater plan at work here. That's not to say that God condones everything that happens. He certainly didn't want Abraham and Sarai to go and make their own way and have Ishmael and make a mess of things and things like that. He gives us the freedom to be our own people. But we can't actually do anything that is kind of a surprise to him. We can't do anything which is outside of his plan. And it's interesting, isn't it? You know, judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. In all these things, there is grace. We are in our devotion hour this morning. There was actually a lineage sort of listed because we were doing some of the readings from before the lead up to Christmas. And there's a whole lineage in Matthew and also in Luke. But the one that's in Matthew follows the line of the kings. And, you know, such and such begat such and such and such and such begat. Anyway, that sort of thing. And as you go through, you go, he was a good king, he was a bad king. He was a good king, he was a bad king. He was a good king. It was almost like, and it seems as well that the further that Israel actually moved away from God, the more the pendulum swung between following God, not following God. And I hate to say it, but I kind of feel like that's kind of where we are in our country a little bit. You know, we see these knee-jerk reactions where people go, you know, things start going wrong, and so they go, oh, right, yeah, okay, we need something which is more traditional, we need something which is more Christian values, and then they go, oh, but this is such a drag, and they go, and we want all of this other stuff as well, so we'll go and vote the other way, or something like that, you know. And so the pendulum swings, and we end up with this, instead of this sort of society where, you know, ideas are debated and things like that, we end up with this society where people just live in uncertainty every 3 or 4 years. And I think that's a real shame. And it shows that there's a lack of stability and foundation actually in the people. I actually, when looking at the Old Testament, when looking at the nation of Israel, it was interesting. I really believe that the people were given the king that actually reflected the people's hearts. Had the people been a great community of people who were, you know, not there to, who were following the instructions of God, they probably would have had a king which was more or less following God's ways as well. Instead, we see that, you know, and it says it every time that, you know, the people went into idolatry, for example. So they went away from following God. They went away to following not atheism, but to following, say, other, you know, other religions that were round about. Anyway, and then, of course, that didn't work out very well. And so they swung back to following God again. And the kings reflected that at the time. So, I don't know. I think it's a very interesting thing where we kind of want all of the wonderful things that following God brings, but we kind of want to do those sins as well that we find really entertaining and stuff as well. Allow those other vices and things and lusts to exist as well. So I don't really think we're very different to the nation of Israel in the Old Testament anyway. That wasn't what I was going to talk about this morning, though, anyway. I wanted to have a quick look at the role of patience in our life, in the way that we can strengthen ourselves, our faith in God, the way that we can build, I guess, a worldview which is robust enough to deal with all of those things that come our way, to understand, have faith that God is in control. And 2 Peter 1, verse 3 to 7 has a great path here. It starts with a recognition that we, like Abraham, have been given promises. And it goes on to tell us what we need to do. I'm actually going to read the New King James one, though there's a bit of a mix. Some of the words are more familiar in the New King James and some are more familiar in the original King James. But I'll read the one on the right. As his divine power hath given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness, through the knowledge of him who called us by glory and virtue. God has given us the instructions of life. He's given us the Bible. He's given us his son, Jesus Christ. He's given us all of those that we know what we need to do. It's up to us to know, to actually follow that. By which we have been given to us exceeding great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. This is the problem. You'll remember that original sin, when Eve saw that the tree was good for food, good for the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise. If we summarize that into the root cause of all lust, really, it was pleasing to our eyes, it was pleasing to the eyes, it was pleasing to our desires, and it was also pleasing to our pride as well. And that's pretty well most of the sins that we undertake are all to do with those three lusts, I guess. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. They're the three things that drive most of the problems out there. And Peter gives us a way out. But also for this reason, give all diligence giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. Now, virtue is much like goodness. It's these things, you know, you've heard patience of the virtue, you know, those sorts of throwaway things. These are good practices. We don't just hear these things. We don't just have faith in Jesus Christ. We look at what he says and the way that we should run our lives, and we go ahead and we do that as well. These are good things that we need to do. These are virtues. To virtue, knowledge. We need to be learning all the time. And then self-control, or as the KJV puts it, temperance. Self-control is the enabler. It's the thing that gives us the ability to say, you know what, I am going to do this and I'm going to do it well. Self-control, perseverance. Or as the KJV puts it, patience. To perseverance, godliness. There's the check. As soon as we go ahead and we study and we look at what these, you know, what we should be doing, the check is, does it reflect what God wants us to be? Is it building better relationships? Is it building a desire to be a better person? Is it building, you know, is it building or supporting family? Is it building churches? Is it, you know, these are the things. These are important things for us to reflect God's likeness, godliness. To godliness, brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness, love, or charity. They're two different types of loves, actually. And I think the thing is that the Christian faith contains all of these things. And it contains a walk. It's not that we all of a sudden become a believer and then we, you know, that's it, we've made it. It becomes an ongoing walk. It becomes a building of your relationship with God and a building of yourself as well. Turning yourself to be a better reflector of God's glory within your life. A better reflector of that life and light. And I think really, in that sort of structure, you find that when you bring all the other religions into and you compare them, they're always missing a few of these things. You know, one of the common things with Christianity, for example, is we recognize that every person has a value, an equal value, under God. It's not that some of us are better than others. It's not that some of us have a higher status. You know, there's some that have like a hierarchy. There's some religions that have a hierarchy. There's some religions that say, well, you don't have to love that person because they're your enemy. You can do whatever you want with them. You don't even have to tell them the truth. That's shocking to us as Christians, but that's the reality of some of these alternatives. Incompatible religions with Christianity. And I think the thing is that through all of this, we need to be following this path. And it's not just that you just work through it and tick, 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 tick. It's a refining. It's a continual development. And we build that knowledge. And we know that when we look at Abraham's life, he made mistakes as well. When we look at King David, he made mistakes. So many good examples of people who made mistakes in their life. And yet what we know is that they're all on a journey. And in Hebrews, as it says, They were searching for a country. They were looking for a place which was not of this world. They were looking for a time when God would actually rule directly, when Jesus would actually rule the world, and then we'll see a great change in the way that, in that Satan will actually be chained down. A time when people won't actually do the wrong thing anymore because Satan won't be there to sort of attract them to do it. And I think, you know, the hope of this church is really to see that time in our lifetimes, to see the promises that we see to this group called Israel, these scattered tribes that who don't know who they are, that are scattered throughout the whole world, as it says, and to see them brought back to become good Christian people with that heritage and that promise. As it said in Revelations, we see some of those promises. And that when Jesus returns, they will actually be ready to meet him. And I think the challenge for all of us is to follow that message there, to follow that path in our lives in 2 Peter, and to actually reflect on how we can encourage others around us, in our nation, in our country, to do that as well. A good way to do it is perhaps people to start returning to church and to follow, take their faith more seriously. And for all the tragedy of last weekend, I do hope that that is something that happens throughout our nation as well. So I think that might do us for today, and we might sing one last worship song, and ask the worship band to come and help.
All right, thanks again, Ben. If everyone would like to stand up, our last song for today is What a Beautiful Name. Yes, you can all take a seat. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for coming, especially coming out in the heat. Tell you what, that's hard to keep concentration, I know. Anyway, I hope everybody has a great lead up to Christmas. We've got Christmas Day service, of course, here 9:30 on Thursday. Until then, just let's keep that keep those promises in our minds that God has given unto us. That He's given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of Him. Let's all pray that we can do that and to reflect that in our lives and those in our communities, especially through the Christmas period. Have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you all again soon.